The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
This is Jason Little, the world's greatest cold fusion developer, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I am this episode's host, Jay Hersko. Joined with me are fellow board members, Troy Lightfoot, Brad Stokes.
Hey.
And Andrew Leff.
What's up?
And this episode is going to be part two of a series we started, believe it or not, almost 12 months ago on the Scaled Agile Framework Simplified. If those loyal listeners do recall, we had myself and Ryan Lockard, along with Brad, were on, I think it was about a year ago, to talk about the basic underpinnings of the Scaled Agile Framework. Brad had some questions for someone who's not been particularly exposed to it. What does the framework mean? How does it work? What are the roles? And basically all the stuff around the exciting scaling with the biggest tool that's available in the market. So joining me again are Troy and Andrew Leff, both of which are SPC 4.5 certified. So they are a certified SAFe instructor. And we're kind of hoping we can have a conversation where if you're new to the scaling game, if you haven't had any experience with SAFe in your current role, maybe you can learn something and maybe it'll tickle your fancy and point you in a new and interesting direction. Did I miss anything, gents, before we start off?
Well, I mean, the first question should probably be, in a few words, what is SAFe?
SAFe is a way to scale Agile.
Andrew?
It's a way to complicate your Scrum.
Okay, we went there early.
That was good.
I would agree with both assessments. My salesman-y pitch would be it's a way to try and deliver Agile to a rather large enterprise through the use of the big picture and the various sundry roles and activities that go along with. And like everything else in the Agile world, it's a tool. So depending on how you use it, if you're trying to use a screwdriver as a hammer, you're going to get crappy results. But if you're trying to use a screwdriver as a screwdriver, you'll get better results. So I guess the first thing we'll start off with, Brad, was your first question.
Basically, coming at this from a beginner, we're looking at how we can actually communicate this well. And one of the first things you run into as the beginner is the wonderful SAFe placemat, which I think a lot of people just rail against because it looks so complex. The other one is the language around SAFe. There are so many acronyms, it's ridiculous. How about we actually identify a few of those and say what they are? The one that I saw recently in a conversation is it's all about getting the art right. Great, I Picasso on the wall.
So the question is, what does art mean? Is that the question?
Well, I think art's one of them. You've got, PI planning, way to shortest job first, the WSJF. You've got so many acronyms. What are the ones that somebody coming into this fresh, coming into this new is going to run headlong into and say, what the heck am I looking at?
All right, Troy, I'm going to say, because I know you're an expert in this, you take weighted shortest job first. Andrew can have art and I'll do PI planning.
Okay. So weighted shortest job first is a prioritization technique based on something called cost of delay by Don Reinerson, first found in his book, Principles of Product Development Flow. And what Dean Leffingwell has done is he's taken Don Reinerson's work and abstracted it to a qualitative level using planning poker style estimates, right? If you want to put it that way, for different types of value, and then dividing that by a possible duration. And that gives you something called a weighted shortest job first. Simply, I mean, the simplest way I can put it, it is a way to prioritize epics and features mainly.
And as an add-on to that, Troy, I was just looking at the deck you sent me earlier today, and weighted shortest job first, for Brad, when you listen to that explanation, it kind of sort of sounds like it's a math problem. But Troy, use the one-liner from your deck. It's not a...
So the most important thing about weighted shortest job first is that it is not a math problem. It is a collaboration problem. Generally, prioritizations are made in a vacuum. So one of the things that weighted shortest job first kind of requires is that people from different parts of the company, stakeholders, product owners, architects, maybe developers, get together and they talk about relative value together. And that's the most important thing, is it brings common understanding. So that's a way to shorten that person. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Troy. Andrew, care to walk everybody through what an ART actually is?
It's an agile release string.
Fantastic. That was quite succinct. So what the heck is an agile release train? How does it relate to the whole thing? Like, if we're coming from just a straight Scrum background, is it like a group of things all happening together at the same time and it comes round like a station? Obviously, it's a metaphor. What's the metaphor?
So it's a team of teams. So when you start to scale and your Scrum practice grows, right? So an ART is, going back to, I feel like I'm taking my SPC, 80 to 125 people assemble an ART. So you're talking a large amount of Scrum teams. Now, your Scrum teams are still the same size. So, you know, 7 ±2. But you just have multiple Scrum teams on a train. And yes, the metaphor is we're planning the train has to make X amount of stops, or there's stops the train needs to make. We need to plan to make sure we have enough runway or tracks laid down to accommodate each one of those stops, and people are getting on and off the train.
So basically, you've got stops on the release train. They normally, what, every 3 months is pretty typical?
So let's take a step back. So when we're talking about the train, right, so we have a program increment,
yep,
which let's say is 10 weeks.
Yeah.
So you have... Okay. 2 week sprints within that 10 week increment. And some of the guidance, and I might be jumping ahead, but if you think about it from a duration standpoint or a time box standpoint, when we talk about a feature, the feature is to be delivered within that 10 week increment.
Got it.
And you're still doing your 2 week sprints.
So basically, you might be something like a large epic, a theme or something like that, but we're calling it a feature. It's a bit of functionality.
No, it's very different. So a feature is delivered, is releasable.
Okay.
So you have to take what you've learned in Scrum and flip it upside down. So in Safe, it's a epic feature story as opposed to feature epic story.
Got it.
So an epic, and if you think about an epic at a portfolio level, an epic is... And I'm just time boxing things, right? So an epic is 6 to 9 months in duration.
Okay.
A feature is 10 weeks in duration, and a story would be within the sprint confines.
Got it. Okay. So that was something. So you're delivering a feature for that particular thing. Do you deliver just one feature for a release train, or do you deliver multiple? How does that get sorted out?
So that actually ties into... And I'll jump in. That ties into the next thing that I was going to explain, which is PI planning.
Cool.
So like Lef said, like Andrew said, typically a PI is 10 weeks. That gives you 5 in a year.
Yep.
So at the start of PI, right before a PI starts, there's typically what's called PI planning, which is a safe prescribed 2-day event, including all the teams that are part of a train. And what they do is there is an agenda that is prescribed by SAFE, starting on the first day with the overarching goals for the PI.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do big room planning where each team that's involved in the current PI, they would plan out, okay, well, what features do we plan on delivering in the next 10 weeks? There's a fair amount of interaction back and forth between, and I'm grossly simplifying because it's 2 days I'm trying to spit into a quick summary. But each team would then work with each other to figure out where the dependencies are, where the overlaps are. Is there an enabler story that needs to be done for team A before they can hand their work to team C, so on and so forth. And the whole 2-day event culminates in a review with leadership about here's what all the teams on this train plan on delivering in the next 10 weeks. Here's where the dependencies are. Here's a quick oversight of risks, and there's a whole roaming the risk board where every risk should be owned or mitigated or you know, actions assigned to it. Mm-hmm. But it's really, it's kind of like a real-time project plan building exercise.
Got it.
But instead of building a project plan, you're building a PI plan constrained to the next 10-week time box.
It sounds like for the planning event, there would need to be a decent amount of planning that happens ahead of time as well. I'm guessing that's handled at a higher level than, say, your actual delivery front?
There is the concept of pre-PI planning. There is the concept of post-PI planning. And Leff, and I know Andrew and Troy can go off the deep end on all those sort of things. They're way more educated than I am. I'm just whatever. But I will say that one of the knocks on SAFe, where I can kind of sort of see where it comes from, is people, I've heard the remark that SAFe is Agile for Waterfall. And one of the main arguments I hear for that statement is things like this. Like, you take 2 days to do planning where, you know, traditionally you have a PM running around trying to plan and nothing around the corner. Anyway, it's when done well, PI planning can be a really powerful exercise. When my last example, we had multiple teams all sitting in the same room and we were able to map dependencies and come to a realistic understanding about what we plan on doing in the next 10 weeks. However, the question is, that's a large investment in capital to take everybody off the phones, for lack of a better term, for 2 days, have them all in a room just caucusing. Someone questioned the validity or the value delivered from 2 days of planning.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend about it. They said part of the way to make the planning session, which can be kind of awesome if it works perfectly, but was to actually do the planning ahead of time. The other thing they said is it's because you're doing a cadence of once every, in this case, we're saying about 10 weeks, every 5 sprints, it could be more, could be less. You tend to really suck at the first one and get better as you go along. So it's like your Scrum sessions, but they're just on a much more extended scale. So it takes a while for those to become more natural. Is that a fair comment? Is that the way that you find things happen?
Troy, what do you think?
I think it's 100% accurate, Brad. So just like anything in life, you know, the more we do it, the better you get at it, for sure.
Cool. And you can have multiple trains running at once. That's kind of part of it. It's like one release train's 120 people, but you might have an org of, I don't know, 500 more.
Yeah, so usually the trains, well, I don't want to say usually, but the train should be assigned to a value stream, and you can have multiple mm-hmm. trains on a value stream.
So another bit of jargon that not everybody's going to know about, what is a value stream?
A value stream is basically what they call concept to cash. So if you have an idea there's a couple different types of value streams, which is, it gets a little confusing. So my brain right now is thinking about the difference between operational and development value streams. And they are different. So when we talk about value streams, we're usually talking about at a high level operational value stream. So what are the products you have? And usually it kind of works in product based, but I could be wrong in different cases, but it's like, what are the different steps that have to happen from an initial trigger to actual delivery, right? And mapping that all out. So let me think of an example. So let's say that you go to the hospital, right? And there's an intake process at the hospital, and that's the trigger. Like, so if you go to the emergency room, right, or something like that, right? So what are the steps between when you first enter the emergency room and when you first leave, when you leave the emergency room, what are the different steps that have to happen for that to be true, right? So you're mapping all that out. So there's going to be something like, obviously there's a receptionist, there's an intake process, there's a waiting room, there's this an evaluation period. So those are all different steps, right? So then you can say, okay, so think about that in software development context with your products. What are the different types of development that needs to be done to achieve those steps, right? And that's how you can start to identify even development value streams, and then you can start to identify release trains. So we might need 2 release trains to this value stream. We might need 4, because to accomplish this goal, there's many different systems that probably have to be worked on, or I don't think this, what I'm explaining is simplified. So somebody else help me here.
So I'll give this one a shot. So I'm currently in an org trying to do safe, and our examples of value streams are currently doing insurance, right? So think about it this way. We have a couple of different value streams. One is the provider, so the people that provide care to our customers. Another is the insurers, which is the clients. We have another value stream, which is the employees, so the employees of the current company. And then we have the fifth one I can never remember: client, customer, provider, employee. And I always forget the fifth one. A different example, Brad, would be, I came from credit cards, where we had value streams such as collections. So collecting on a past due bill was a value stream. And there were trains that supported all the different activities there: payment plans, reaging, et cetera, et cetera. We had another value stream that was just fraud. We had a third value stream that was new customer marketing. So think about it. My best way to describe it is that traditionally I've seen them aligned. This is the third org I've seen it aligned in, along business capability.
Okay, cool. And it seems like we're stepping up ranks here, because I'm kind of seeing that there's this team level where you're operating your little thing, and that's more or less Scrum with other bits wrapped around it. Then you've got your release sort of program level where you've got a release train that's running. Then you've got this value stream sitting on top of that. It might have a couple of different release trains on it. I'm guessing there's another step above this that would be looking more at the enterprise level, where you have multiple value streams running at the same time. Is that where we're going to this ultimately? Am I going mad?
Yeah, there's this whole idea of budgeting and lean budgeting, and budgeting for value streams and portfolio planning.
Can we talk about that, lean budgeting?
Yeah,
give us a definition.
So I've been talking a lot, so I'm gonna defer to Lef, and I can chime back in.
No, I think with safe, so they're scaling within the scaling. So just because you have all these options, it's sort of, how do we want to set up the organization, and how does safe help solve some of the problems that we've identified that we want to, you know, tackle? So when we talk about value streams, it just doesn't mean, oh, we're going to create a value stream. So it's not just a, hey, our organization is set up this way, so we want to do this. It's how far up scale, how much scaling do we want to do? And does creating a value stream make sense? So if you think about, if we take an area where we have a marketing department, and within that marketing department, we have a lot of different verticals, and we're doing work as individual trains within those verticals, right? So every train is aligned to a different vertical in marketing. Like, let's say we have a mobile train, we have a .com train, we have a UX train, we have a, if that makes sense.
I'm following.
The value stream might be marketing.
Okay.
Right? So all marketing should create alignment of work, and then we break it down based upon the work, not based upon the team.
Got it.
So from there, when we talk about budgeting, there's a whole, we can go really deep into the weeds. And when we talk about lean agile budgeting, if we try and simplify it, it's, we're looking to fund the teams, not the project.
Got it.
Right. Bring the work to the team, not the team to the work.
That makes sense. And like I said, you can push up further as well. You said you get into that really big enterprise level. So the thought occurs, there is lots and lots and lots of safe. And you actually mentioned it yourself. You try to use the bits that work. Do you think one of the issues that people have with safe is it kind of gives you the kitchen sink and everything else and every bit of trim, and it's really hard to cut back a very full system into something that's lean, as opposed to grow something that's less fleshed out into something that works? Is that one of the criticisms that people have of
Safe? For me, some of my own criticism, it's not with Safe. So I have concerns and challenges with organizations that move to Safe and purchase Safe almost like as a COT solution, so an out-of-the-box solution, but they truly don't know what problem they're looking to solve by scaling. So if we have a crappy Scrum practice and our Scrum is really crappy, we're going to scale crappy Scrum. And that's a terrible thing, right? We don't want to do that. So it's a shiny object to me. It's like, oh, I like to have a new girlfriend every 2 years because I get bored with my existing one. So Safe is the new girlfriend for a lot of organizations. And it's just not, in my opinion, in my experience, we're not looking to see how Safe helps us expose and solve the challenges across the organization and create alignment. And Safe falls heavily at the leadership level. I mean, it really pulls in a lot of the Kotter principles. And if you're not attacking it at the leadership level, Safe is not in my opinion, and I'm sure a bunch of people would disagree, it's very hard from the ground up. It's very different from Scrum in that way. So it makes assumptions that your Scrum practice is operating well and you've gotten that from the ground up approach, but you've hit a stopping point. So now Safe enables the organization to attack organizational alignment as well as organizational delivery of business value. But you're asking a lot of the company to actually be able to define business value.
That'd take quite a mature approach to it, wouldn't it? It's a basically Safe, not off the shelf, really does need to be tailored to the implementation, to what the company needs. But that takes a certain level of maturity in both leadership and the company itself.
It takes a large investment, and that's the ask, right? Where I'm asking the organization to invest in, you know what, we're going to create a lot of disruption. So where do you want to start? What's your threshold for pain?
Right. The organization's biggest constraint is the culture's ability to absorb change. And to answer your question, Brad, I think where I've seen it struggle is you put that big picture in front of the C-suite, right? You put that in front of a senior leader, and automatically they start matching pieces and say, okay, well, my project managers, now they become product managers. And my BA is now a product owner. And I have this level director person. They're now a solution manager. And you know what I mean? So it makes it very easy to look at this picture. And to my point about the organization's ability to absorb change, it's much, you're sort of tricking yourself into thinking there's much less organizational change because I can create this one-to-one mapping for current state roles to future Safe state roles. And like Andrew said, unless the leadership is really thinking through about what problem are you trying to solve, you're basically swapping one bucket of problems for another.
Yeah. Am I wrong in thinking that Safe is like Big Bang approach, or is it often used as a Big Bang approach when it should be more staggered, or how do you even start?
So,
that's a big question.
Okay, my opinion on this one is that they usually started at the team level.
Okay.
And then they realize that it's, in order for it to be successful, you need to scale it up, because if you have a bunch of siloed teams, so if you have one team who can only work on one thing and you have another team who can only work on one thing, then it becomes very difficult. You don't have cross-functional teams, it becomes very difficult to do the Safe model the way it's designed. So what happens is they think that, okay, we're going to do this quarterly planning. They call it PI planning, and we're going to come up with some velocity and these types of, we're going to ask you guys to commit to things in, you know, quarters, and a lot of managers like that. But the reality is that doesn't mean that we're necessarily able to deliver things, features any faster if we don't have cross-functional teams, right? So I don't know, Lev, what do you think? Is that, am I making any sense or?
Yeah, no, you are. And I think, again, it goes back to, it's just, when we talk about ground up, the teams are used to that constant change, right? Inspect and adapt, inspect and adapt, inspect and adapt. I don't believe when we get up into the higher ranks, leadership, and how we craft our ask and how we truly want to define epics, features, capabilities, enablers, all these things that need to be defined, but we need to collectively approach it as a team. I think that that's where we're not prepared. So when we scale, the organization isn't prepared to behave in that way. It's like, I just told you to go do that. Come back to me in 10 weeks. Well, that's not the way this works, right? It's, you need to be engaged. And the ask is your commitment to stay engaged.
Yeah. And I will say that, I will add that we all of us on this episode have a mutual friend who shall remain nameless, who is currently going through an enterprise transformation with Music Safe. And the problem that this person is running into is the organization is a very, very heavy waterfall organization with a lot of layers of bureaucracy and a lot of layers of politics. So they're trying to do the big bang. Okay, we'll slot these people there. Now they're going to be solution managers. And then above them, they're going to have lead portfolio management. And they're trying to do almost all of it at once. And they're trying from almost the top down with a waterfall type approach. And there's a, and I know this person keeps bringing up, what if teams? Don't we need to have teams first? And I think they're falling on deaf ears based upon the last conversation I had with the person. But that's where some organizations think, well, we have to do it all at once. Whereas all of us on this podcast would probably agree, and most of our listeners would agree, that you start with the teams, you start small, and you scale from there. And I think that's where it'll get dicey.
Okay.
So for me, I'd prefer not to start with the teams.
Really?
I want to start at the leadership level and prepare the leadership to own the change.
I agree 100%.
And then literally, and I don't mean this from a command control perspective, but top down. To me, SAFE has to start top down. It's the foundation of SAFE. It's part of the four pillars, right? The foundation of those four pillars is leadership. And if you don't have leadership engaged and aligned and truly invested in scaling, this does not, in my experience, does not work from the ground up.
So would you say, Lef, and I'm going to get to you, Troy, for your input, would you say that in order for it to really succeed, it really needs to be, the leadership part needs to push almost a cultural adoption from the top, but the practices and stuff need to come up from the bottom at the same time?
I think, you know, when you go through the train, and Dean says this all the time, is launch the train, and inspect and adapt, right? We're going to inspect what we did, adapt based upon the feedback. But if leadership isn't aligned to doing the same, you can't progress from the ground up, because you're constantly dealing with the swirl and the churn of, well, we have other responsibilities. We're really not focused on that. So if the focus isn't there to truly change and invest in the change, it just falls flat. I mean, SAFE just becomes another framework. It just becomes another, you know, we can make your waterfall faster if you want, because we're not going to change fast enough. It's just a matter of what is the value of scaling? Why do we feel that scaling addresses the challenges that the organization faces today? I find SAFE to be an extremely effective method, but it's not effective in preparing the organization to do what they need to do if they're not invested in learning and understanding what they're trying to resolve or trying to improve upon.
So before you get to the next question, I'm going to give you one example and then I'll be done with this question. So I do a lot of trainings on top of coaching. And in the training sessions I do, we do these little workshops where the teams get to just work on a practice example. So we do non-software development related things. Like they have to make a brochure, but they have to use like a scrum. They have to use a scrum process kind of by the book. And we teach them the process, like new teams, stuff like that. Right. And it's amazing how if you were to walk in the middle of that exercise, it's usually about 3 hours where they do the simulation. If you were to walk in the middle of that, you would think like these teams have been together a long time and they're high performing teams because they're collaborating, they're working together, they're communicating, they're doing all this cool stuff. They're like totally invested, right? And a lot of times this is the first time that people have ever been met each other. And then you go see them work in real life and it's nothing like that. And I mean, just an observation is that it's way more about the environment. Like if you have the right environment that can, if you remove the organizational environment and just put them in that setting, they'll perform as a high performing team with a small amount of like teaching, right? But that's why I think what Lef is saying is so true, is that the leadership is the key to all of this. So you can start spinning up trains all you want, but ultimately, if you don't have leadership buy-in and they're not creating the right environment, it's not really going to be successful, or it's not going to be that effective. In fact, just making me think, you know, recently, a lot of the times that as coaches we spend at the team level probably should be more at the leadership level. It's just that we don't always get those opportunities. So, because I really feel like that's the biggest challenge to the safe implementations, if you want to call it that.
Okay. Well, I know this one's going to be a short episode for our listeners, because a bunch of us are time constrained. But I do want to thank Brad. I want to thank Troy. And I want to thank Andrew for being a part this evening. We were definitely, judging by the agenda alone, I don't even think we got through the first two or three bullets. I think this is a topic that all of us are pretty knowledgeable and passionate about. So I think we're going to have to do an episode three. But on behalf of all of us, on behalf of myself and our listeners, I would like to thank you. Andrew, thank you, Troy, and thank you, Brad. And on behalf of the four of us, I would like to thank all of you listeners. Once again, if you're enjoying your hearing, please rate us on iTunes, thumbs up on all the other applications. We appreciate your constant fandom, and we will speak again soon.
But one thing, as we're closing, I think that this conversation stemmed from a coalition topic that Brad brought forth. If people are still curious about talking in this way, we have a lot of good information, and we would love to continue this type of conversation with many more questions. So if people are curious about this, continue to ask, because this was an organic approach, right? So Brad brought this forth and was a active participant on the coalition. So again, we want to keep promoting that and keep people curious and keep asking questions to keep them engaged.
Perfect. Perfect. And we will end with that. So thank you, gentlemen, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.